Welcome everybody to the Pagino Baseball Clubhouse in the landmark cast iron building at 67 East 11th Street. As we always say, to those who are here for the first time, welcome. To those who have been here before, welcome home. Tonight, it's a pleasure to have with us Sean Murray, who's... This is a very interesting podcast for those of you listening at home, because on one hand, you're going to hear some interesting stories. On the other hand, you have no idea what you're missing visually. As you know, normally we have book events where the author speaks and we have great discussions, and then you can go out and get the book. Tonight's a little bit different. You'll be able to go out and get these amazing photographs, but you're really missing quite a display here. So we're going to try to bring this to life as much as we can. And I'm going to get out of the way shortly and just turn this over to Sean. But just in brief, Sean's grandfather, Bruce Murray Sr., was considered one of the premier sports photographers of the 1920s, based out of Philadelphia. And he shot many things, but he had a special affection for baseball.
Absolutely.
And he happened to be in a very good city at that time for that, because at that time, Philadelphia, as many of you know, had a National League team and an American League team, which it no longer has. So because of that, every team had to come through Philadelphia that was in Major League Baseball. So his grandfather was able to get pretty much anybody he wanted in his photographs.
Right.
And I am not a photographic expert by any means, but the one thing I can say is, and I'm not just blowing smoke at Sean here, we always have this one photograph of Sean's grandfather, Bruce, on the wall at the clubhouse. And by far, it's the thing that catches the most attention and the most eyes and the most comments of anything we have on our wall here. And I'm going to let Sean talk about that particular photo. But the photographs that are here tonight, and which you can also see on Sean's website, which we'll give all that information, and it'll be listed on the podcast link, they're really something. And his grandfather obviously had quite an amazing talent, a very unique talent. And at this point, I'm going to just turn the floor over to Sean. He's going to speak, tell us all about his grandfather. I may then have some questions. And anyone in the audience, please feel free to just raise your hand if you have a question. I'm glad to take all questions. And then afterwards, you can feel free to talk to Sean and buy any of these beautiful photographs.
Very good. Thank you, Jay. And thank you very much for having me here this evening. And it's a shame that it is a bit more visual than it is kind of audio, but people can look at the website if they want to listen to this maybe and look at the website too or something to see the images. But it's always good to see them in person because of the quality of the photography, because each one of these photographs is printed directly from an original negative. And first-generation photography, especially large-format photography, is really amazing. The quality, the depth, the contrast, you know, is really something to see. And my grandfather shot all large-format, mostly 4x5 or 5x7. And a lot of these negatives are so old that they're made out of glass. And the quality is amazing. I don't know if there was more silver salts on the emulsion back then or what, but and he was a professional for many, many years, almost over 40 years. He started around 1911 as his career, and he retired in the 1950s. So very, very long career. But the majority of what he liked, I think, mostly was baseball, and that was his real passion. Although he shot, you know, political figures, and he shot a lot of, you know, Americana images, children's street scenes, political figures, historical figures, military figures, and so forth. He was in front of many presidents. I have images of presidents and generals and, you know, dignitaries and so forth. But the majority of the negatives that he kept for himself were baseball images. But just to give a little background about him, I mean, I am the grandson of Bruce Murray Sr. I was almost Bruce III, but my mother liked Sean. Hey, you know, I like it, it's fine. But my father was Bruce Jr., and if it wasn't for my father, these negatives wouldn't be here because, of course, my grandfather was a photographer. My father also was a photographer and worked alongside my grandfather and had the foresight to hold on to whatever negatives, you know, that he kept and survived the years and passed them on to me, and he also taught me photography. So I print these photographs myself. I have a dark room I do them both photographically, and I do some digitally, depending upon the condition and so forth. But most of them, the ones you see here tonight, are all done photographically in a darkroom. So my grandfather was a photojournalist. I mean, he worked for newspapers, based in Philadelphia, but he traveled anywhere from New York to D.C., covered a lot of events. I have some presidential inaugurations in D.C., but he also made it to Florida. He was a huge baseball fan and was invited to go to spring training. My grandfather was very close friends with Connie Mack, who's probably one of the most famous managers of all time. And that was a close, close friendship. And the little biography, if you see, I think I have some up there. If you guys want to pass it around and take a look at it, it's just a one-page sheet that has a little bio of my grandfather. Yeah, that's a great picture of him with Eddie Collins. My grandfather has his camera on his hip, and Eddie Collins has his arm around him. It's at spring training. It's a great shot. And I have a lot of photographs like that of my grandfather down in spring training or in the ballparks, you know, like arm in arm with some of these guys. I have one of them wrestling with Jimmy Fox and playing golf with Lefty Grove and drinking with, you know, this guy and that guy. So he was a real character and loved to, you know, to kind of get close to these guys. And I guess he was very much able to back then, which is wonderful. But he did a lot of traveling, and he would go to spring training and take a lot of photographs there as well. Some of these are from that. So he had great access, you know. The majority, a lot of his work was owned and was part of the newspapers and published, and a lot of those were destroyed, and the newspapers that he worked for were based in Philadelphia. But luckily, he shot a lot on his own, or at least some on his own, and was able to, you know, save these negatives and pass them on and keep them. And luckily, my father kept them and passed them on, and so now I can have these as a legacy to print and keep his work alive. He was the first president and founding father of the Philadelphia Press Photographers Association. He won a lot of awards during his lifetime, so he was well credited, but a lot of people don't know his name because they didn't give photo credit for photographs back then. I don't think they started that until maybe the 50s or something. So no one knows his name. People, his cronies know him, and he's well known in his field, but, you know, in the news photography, but a lot of people, but the general public doesn't know his name. So my goal was to do fine art photographic prints from the original negatives, show the quality of his craftsmanship and his art, and get his name and keep his name with them. As I'm going to say, that little biography comes with each photograph that you see here, and the photograph also comes with a certificate of authenticity that confirms its provenance and its limited edition. And also there's some kind of stories, which are really neat too. So, but we have, right now we have, let's see, six... up on display, or actually seven, because of the one that you have here, you know,
right.
And they're all available through the, you know, your place here.
Just for those listening at home, they're available at Bergino.com or the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse.com, and your website
is BruceMurray.com.
MURRAY.com.
Right.
BruceMurray.com. Otherwise, though, certainly feel free to just give us a call at the clubhouse. And we can put you right in touch with Sean.
Right.
It's not a problem.
Exactly. So I have six showing, and I also have a few in the print bin over here that are matted. But all the ones you see here are first-generation original photographic prints. They're hand-printed from original glass plate negatives, mostly in the 1920s and 30s. And, of course, the real popular ones have some of the big names in them, like Ruth, Babe Ruth, and Lou Gehrig, and Ty Cobb, and Jimmy Fox. And but they're... images that were never previously published from my research, and I wanted to do, you know, fine art original prints. I number each one, and each one's embossed as well, and I offer them framed and unframed and even matted, so you can have it kind of three different ways. But they are archival, and that's really important. These are silver gelatin photographic prints that are done in what's called a full archival washed fiber-based photographic print, so they have the best longevity, and everything that touches them is also archival, the matting, the backing, and all that, so... but to start, I think one of the most unique photographs that my grandfather had taken was this, the Babe Ruth final game. And I have been working with my grandfather's photographs since about 1991, and I started offering them to the public at that time. And I've done a lot of shows. I've done, you know, traveled nationally with them, the big sports collector conventions, the NSCCs and all those, and different shows throughout the country. And I've never... found another photograph that exists of Babe Ruth at his final game. It was kind of a surprising or unexpected thing that happened that day. I have a story that comes with this that was actually printed in the Phillies Encyclopedia, And they allowed me to use that one-page story to go with this photograph because it goes so well and it explains how unique it was. Babe Ruth only played one inning of that game, totally unexpectedly turned around and walked off the field and never played again. And this photograph just shows it so well, his expression. He's sitting there in the dugout, kind of dejected looking, and the light coming over the top and the other players behind him. And it's something about his expression just is so telling. That he looked like he's pondering. I mean, the man who made baseball so popular and was bigger than life actually decided to give up the game that day and walked off the field and never played again. So that's, I think, one of my grandfather's strongest and most unique images. Sad, but also very poignant.
Yeah, and for those listening at home who may or may not know, Babe Ruth is not, he did not retire as a Yankee. He retired his last game, he was with the Boston Braves.
Yeah.
And, which even lends it, I think there's more drama to the photo because of that.
Because of that, yeah. You can see him sitting up the Braves uniform, and it was an old Baker Bowl in Philadelphia, an old wooden stadium. You can see the old rotted wood in the background, and they were kind of using him as a gate draw. You know, they promised to make him a manager, and it's just this very sad, sad kind of image, but so it's such a poignant image. And kind of the opposite of that, one of my favorites is the Babe Ruth taking a picture of Lou Gehrig. That's kind of a very happy kind of shot. It's, you know, Babe Ruth with holding a camera, facing Lou Gehrig, who's smiling, holding a bat. And this happens to be old Shy Park in Philadelphia, and all the photographers in the background scrambling around trying to get the photograph as well. But my grandfather was on the other side shooting it. And it's just a happy shot. I always thought it looked like a Norman Rockwell painting. It had a real wonderful Americana feel. And it's just, Ruth has his head up, you know, and it's just a really neat shot showing the ballpark in the background. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and as we were just discussing before, I think what makes your grandfather, where he had this unique talent, it's you know, most people think anybody can take a photograph, but obviously there's about 10 photographers in this shot,
right.
And your grandfather had the foresight to not stand in the line with the other 10 photographers. He decided to walk to the exact opposite side.
Correct.
So he got the other photographers in the background of the shot.
Right.
And it's just, that's a unique talent to know that. And it's really, that's my personal favorite. Right. I just love that photograph.
It is wonderful. Yeah, two of the most famous ball players of all time, fooling around with a camera and, you know, the ballpark. And yeah, there is actually another photograph that exists that photographer in the center actually had taken, and it's a UPI photograph, and I'd seen it, and it's, in my opinion, not as nice. Of course, I'm biased, but Ruth has his face covered up with the camera, and Gehrig's not smiling, and it's funny, but in the background, there's only one photographer, and it's my grandfather taking this photograph, so it's kind of an interesting kind of thing. Also, this one is probably one of the most famous, or I should say popular images that my grandfather had taken. It's been published in books a few times. A lot of people have seen it. They're not sure sometimes, you know, who to credit. The photograph. It is my grandfather's. I have the original negative to it. It's a great shot of left to right, Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox in the middle, and Babe Ruth on the right. I call it the Legends of Summer. It's just a wonderful, wonderful shot. They all have, three have wonderful expressions. You see them full figure. All three legs have their legs are crossed, leaning back against the stands. Just wonderful smiles. I do that. That's a 16x20 photographic print. But it's super clear because it's from a very large format negative, so I can do that. I can blow these images up larger like that with super clarity. The others are all 11x14, which is my normal size. Matted out, it really makes a nice piece, and it's still, you know, a nice size. That one is vertical, and it just works well on both sizes. I do it 11x14 or 16x20. Just a great, great shot. Another one over here we have, which is really an interesting shot because it brings in a whole other thought about the history of baseball and how it kind of had to deal with science, I guess you could say. I titled the photograph Night Baseball with a question mark because it's Ty Cobb, Thomas Alva Edison in the middle, and Connie Mack in Fort Myers, Florida. My grandfather would go to spring training. The Philadelphia Athletics had their spring training camp in Fort Myers, which I believe was, if not the first, one of the first spring training camps that ever existed. They started doing that, I guess, in the 20s to bring people down and buy homes or something. I don't know, whatever. They get the ball players down there. And, of course, Thomas Edison had a very famous winter home down there next to Ford and Firestone, and it's still a wonderful museum. I've actually visited it. And this ballpark is still there. It's a National Historical Landmark in the center of Fort Myers. It's called Terry Park. And I actually visited there. It's kind of, it looks the same. But it's really wonderful, you know, those three men standing there together discussing about, you know, illuminating the game at night and how that made baseball such a more viable industry to even actually happen, that people could come after work and see the game at night. And I spoke to a man, but he wrote a book about the first night game. And, of course, Edison was involved. You know, who better would have been involved? I think Edison had some type of idea of putting the lights down underground or something in these pits, then shining up so they wouldn't blind the players. Or there was other, you know, kind of theories about how to do this, but obviously it didn't work that way. But Edison actually died before the first night game happened. I think it was in the 30s, 32 or 33 or something. But it's just a wonderful shot of those three men together. And I guess Ty Cobb being a real, maybe an opportunist too. I think he died a very wealthy man. He was the first man ever to invest, or one of the first people ever to invest in Coca-Cola. So he was very, I don't know what.
Yeah, it's actually interesting about Ty Cobb because besides that photo, there's another photo here called Smiling Ty Cobb from 1927.
Right.
And I had never seen Ty Cobb in any photograph ever smile. I mean, he has this image of being this real quote-unquote bastard. And
meanest man in baseball.
Despised by teammates, opponents, by everybody. Your grandfather somehow managed to get along with him very well, and the photo is unbelievable. It's him smiling, and he's kind of doing this little jog where both of his feet are off the ground.
Right.
He's in midair, and it's really just an extremely unique photograph. And could you talk a little bit about your grandfather and Ty Cobb?
Yeah. I did meet my grandfather, but I was very young, actually, when he passed away. But I did hear some stories both from him and from my father growing up about, you know, different things that happened during his lifetime and what he experienced and so forth. Got to know him best through his work, his photography. But it is a rare shot. I mean, actually, Cobb played his final 2 years with the Philadelphia Athletics, and this was in spring training. I believe it was the first year he actually came. And I guess he was very, you know, my grandfather's a real personable person, and he was a real kidder and got, you know, really close to a lot of the ball players and had a real character, and with Connie Mack as well. So I guess he found his way to this mean guy and found a nice side of them. And he took a number of photographs. There's actually one of Edison batting, too, and Ty Cobb, in his autobiography, wrote about the time he was in Fort Myers and pitched the ball to Thomas Edison, and Thomas Edison never held a bat before, but he hit the ball. And actually, my grandfather kind of captured that with a couple of those shots. It's funny. But, got the meanest man in baseball to smile.
It's amazing.
Some of the others, let's see, we have. This one's really a wonderful shot of Chuck Kline and Jimmy Fox. Can everyone see this? It's really an amazing happening in baseball history, speaking of the Philadelphia Athletics, and in this case, the Phillies as well. It's the only time in the history of the game that there was not only one Triple Crown winner, but two Triple Crown winners the same year, and even more unbelievable, both in the same city. So, I mean, something that was just amazing to happen and probably will never, ever happen again. And even more interesting, one was a left-hander and one was a right-hander. And my grandfather got him to pose on either side of, you know, the home plate at Old Baker Bowl in Philadelphia. Jimmy Fox with his sleeves cut, showing his big arms. He was a real power hitter. And Chuck Kline was, you know, quite a power hitter himself. Just an amazing happening in baseball history. We haven't had a Triple Crown winner since 1967.
Right.
So how difficult that is to do, even with steroid use or whatever, how difficult that is to accomplish, to have two is unbelievable, and both in the same city is just amazing. So we captured so well that amazing happening in baseball history.
Do you happen to know who the catcher is in that photograph?
I don't. It's a Phillies catcher. You can see the arm patch, but with the mask, it's a little hard to see.
Yeah,
I'd assume it's a starting, but some of these, I did like, I'm still researching some of the images, the negatives that I have, so I have a few more that I'm working on, and sometimes my grandfather's very specific about writing dates and so forth, and what was happening on the negative holders, sometimes he wasn't, so I've had to do some research with a lot of uniforms is probably the best to make sure you get the date and know, some of them I've had dated pretty close, some I had to use just circa this date. But uniforms help a lot, stripes on socks, and, you know, things like that, logos change and so forth. So
there's also something just from baseball history, which I never knew until you told me. It's in that smiling Ty Cobb photograph with his undershirt connected by buttons to his uniform.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it's actually a sleeve extension.
It's some of the uniforms.
What's great about these photographs is that they're so detailed. You can see, you know, the texture, the uniforms, the buttons, and the leather and the equipment. So even though it's black and white, there's actually more degrees of tonal range in a black and white photograph than there is in a color photograph, so by a substantial amount. So you get great texture, and you can see detail. It's just not color. But in this one, yeah, Ty Cobb is wearing a uniform top jersey that has button-on sleeves, so you can make it a short sleeve or a long sleeve by buttoning it on like three sides or something. Pretty strange. And some of the things you can see, the way they take their bats and the way their socks and the way their shoes were, and it's really fascinating to see what the equipment was like back then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, their caps and so forth. And also in the spring training, some of them you can see where they would actually look like rinse out or wash out their uniforms and hang them out to dry. So you can see them practicing, but you see all these uniforms lined up on these wooden posts. It's the funniest thing. Doing their laundry, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
See, the other one we have up here is a wonderful foursome, also of Al Simmons, Babe Ruth, Jimmy Fox, and Lou Gehrig. And I believe that's 1928.
Yes.
In Shy Park. Great shot of, you know, four amazing players. What's amazing too, it's four of the five that Carl Hubbell struck out in, I believe it was the 1932 All-Star game, the first All-Star game.
Yeah.
Amazing lineup of amazing hitters and consistent hitters, especially with Simmons. And what's unique about that photograph too is you can see once again the long sleeve when Gehrig has Yankees uniform long sleeve. But even more unique in that photograph, it's, I believe, the only year or one of the few years that the Yankees uniform said Yankees across the front for their away jersey,
right,
as opposed to it was just NY.
Right.
You know? Of course, the home would have pinstripes, but that's unique to see. It's a great shot.
Yeah, beautiful.
But one of the most popular is the one you have on the wall here that you display, is the Gehrig speaker Cobb and Ruth. And that one is over half sold out of the edition. It's just been really, really strong. It's great clarity in that image. And four amazing legends in one photograph. Gehrig is kind of young there. He's, you know, you can see he's younger than the rest. Ty Cobb was almost his final year. And Gehrig was just coming up. But what you think, it must have been cold that day because they have their warm-up jackets on, too. Except for Cobb, I guess he was too hard. He was too tough. He didn't want to wear that. But we have Lou Gehrig, Tris Speaker, Ty Cobb, and Babe Ruth all together in one photograph. And what's unique about that, too, is that it's rare to see, at least during that time, to see Cobb and Ruth standing next to each other because they really didn't like each other. You know, they were playing two different ball games. Cobb was all about keeping the game in and, you know, hit and run, and Ruth was about knocking and power hitting and so forth. So it's a wonderful, wonderful photograph. That was taken in Shy Park as well, 1928. But for amazing legends. It's a shame that not that many people know as much about Tris Speaker, but Hall of Famer, first inducted into the Hall of Fame. Yeah, definitely.
Actually, I have a question about that photograph. Because
yeah.
People, as I mentioned before, they do come in. We have all these beautiful original pieces on the wall, just other very unique pieces.
Right.
People will stare at that. And then so I'll sometimes stare at it. And then one day I realized all four players, none of them are looking at your grandfather.
Mm.
They're all looking in a different direction. So do you know, was another photographer taking their shot and he was taking the shot kind of from the side?
Yeah, I would think so because, I mean, it looks like a photo opportunity, a photo op there because they were kind of lined up in a row like that. So, yeah, I'm sure there was. And there was a lot of photographers on the field. And it's kind of funny, too. The photographers of that time didn't have telephoto lenses, so they were, you know, right off the baselines a lot of times and, you know, right on the field to get photographs. So it's funny. Of course, these were opportunities where they were just walking on the field after or before
right.
the game. But yeah, it must have been another, I'm sure there was some other photographers there. I've never seen another photograph like that of that particular group of those four with that clarity. That's a shame because a lot of these photographers, even though they took shots, for whatever reason, the negatives get lost or destroyed, and they can never reproduce a photograph as an original. because, you know, first generation original off the negative. So you'll see reprints, which is taking a photograph and then making a copy of the photograph. And that's second generation, and it loses so much. Whereas working from an original negative is pristine. You know, it's amazing to get the detail and clarity that you want in a fine art photograph. So, yeah, I'm sure there was. That's been the most popular, as I said, over half sold out. I was mentioning earlier to one of the gentlemen here, too, that I've tried to find homes for the photographs, not only in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, each one of these is now in the Baseball Hall of Fame. There's a book over there, I think a little photographic book that I left out that has photographs of me donating them to the Baseball Hall of Fame, a little, you know, little handshake and the photograph there, and a photo op myself there, actually. But I wanted to show people that it did, and Pat Kelly's in there from the Baseball Hall of Fame, the photo curator, and they were very nice, and they have 13 images, like 14 images now, of my grandfather's work for their permanent collection, and they'll use for display. But I had to stipulate that they can't reproduce them because it's a limited numbered edition. They can keep that final number print and they can display it. But so not only in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but I found homes for some of these others. Like that one is in the Ty Cobb Museum in, I think it's in Royston, Georgia, or in Georgia, in a big medical complex. It's a hospital that was named after him or something. And let's see, the Babe Ruth Final Game is in the Babe Ruth Museum in Baltimore. The Thomas Edison photograph is in the Thomas Edison Museum in Fort Myers, Florida, which is part of his home there, and which is wonderful because that's where it was taken. So I tried to find different places that would, you know, be nice to have these images there. I'm trying to think of what else. I think they may have the Smiling Ty Cobb in that also, in the Cobb Museum. But I also have some other images here, real quick to go through them, I guess.
Sure.
This is one of Mickey Cochran, very Hall of Fame catcher, really beautiful shot. It's a little more artistic type of shot, too. So he did kind of ones that were posed and ones that were a little more action. Not too much action, but this was a really beautiful shot because he's throwing his hat and his mask off, running for the ball with all his equipment on. And this, I believe, was in Fort Myers, Florida also because of the, you can see the background. But it's a wonderful, beautiful, really beautiful shot. You can see the detail and all of his equipment. And an amazing Hall of Famer. I think he still holds the highest lifetime batting average to this day for catcher. Yeah. And he's also the man that Mickey Mantle was named after, they say.
Yeah.
Luckily, they didn't know his real name was Gordon. Gordon Cochran. Can you imagine Gordon Mantle?
Not quite
the
same.
Not exactly the same ring.
No.
Let's see what else we have here.
There is a team photograph. I mean, I have a lot of team photographs, but because he was based in Philadelphia, so I have some Phillies and some athletics. And because of his close relationship with Connie Mack, I guess he probably did a lot more of the athletics. But this is a wonderful team shot of the 29 athletics, which was an amazing team. I mean, many sports writers to this day love to discuss between the 27 Yankees and the 29 A's about, you know, just two amazing ball teams. And that was amazing, too. During this era, you were talking about my grandfather was shooting the 27 Yankees and the 29 A's. So almost every ball player on the field was a Hall of Famer when he was taking these photographs. Pretty amazing. But it's great to see the backgrounds, too. Like, there's a peanut vendor in the background here wearing a white uniform. And the old steel girders in the background for these old ballparks. Really wonderful. There we go. Let's see. This is an old-timers game, so this is kind of interesting. And speaking of the background, too, you can see some of the signage. This is a wonderful one where Lifebuoy was a great advertiser in the old ballparks. This one says Lifebuoy ends BO. And really, you know, wonderful. Get right to the point, right?
Oh, yeah.
But this happens to be the Philadelphia Phillies' 50th anniversary shot, although it's kind of like an old timers game. This was taken at Old Baker Ball in Philadelphia, which is where the Phillies played, went back to like late 1800s or something. There's an old tin wall, kind of like the Green Monster, whatever, a lot of bank things in it and so forth. They had a short side with ones, but this is all old ballparks. Had a lot of weird shapes, you know, because they were in the inner city. But it's wonderful. Chief Bender's in here. Johnny Evers, you know, Tinker's Evers a chance. Honus Wagner is in here, too, Pirates. So you had some ball players from different teams and different eras, but this was the 50th anniversary of the Phillies, but it was taken in 1933. So that's how old that franchise is. These guys were playing turn of the century. Pretty amazing. This is the 11x14 of the Garrett Fox and Ruth. So you can see it looks great in both sizes. And let's see. This is a nice shot of Connie Mack. I titled this Meeting of the Minds because it's just three great baseball minds coming together, sitting there. Of course, Connie Mack was famous for being the great tactician. You know, he would always wear a suit and a tie and never wear a uniform. Was, I guess, the only manager ever to not wear a uniform during his whole career. But he brought a lot of respect to the game, and when he started in the late 1800s, I guess, there was a lot of rowdiness or whatever, and he had to kind of bring a lot of respect to the game. But never could leave, was never allowed to walk on the field. So he was always in the dugout kind of giving instructions and moving players around. It's a great shot of him and Eddie Collins and Kid Gleason. So three great baseball minds. I have a couple photographs, too. It's kind of interesting that during a game, you could see the umpires would actually come over to Connie Mack and talk to him instead of, because he couldn't come out onto the field. That's a lot of respect they had for him.
And what year is that?
This particular one is 1930. Yeah. You see, once again, the old steel girders in the background. And all. That one's such great clarity, too, in this one. You get a chance to see them up close. Oh, this is a wonderful photograph of Jimmy Fox and his father. It's titled Father and Son. It's just a great shot of the great Jimmy Fox, Hall of Famer, 500 home run hitter. We were just talking about Jimmy Fox a little earlier, and you know, he was called the right-handed Ruth, and the double X, the Beast, too. I don't think he liked the Beast, but he had huge arms, great, great ball player. And this is him and his father, and I have a story that comes with this one. Oh, I meant to mention that a lot of them do come with stories. I mentioned that the Babe Ruth final game comes with a story, which is really important because it's such an interesting happening, and it describes what happened that day, what people saw, what he said. So it really goes well with it. I tried to put together stories for each one. I'm working on a couple of the other ones. The Fox and Klein has a story. Smiling Ty Cobb has a story. And this one has a story with Jimmy Fox and his father. It's really an interesting story about how his father put a baseball in his son's hand since the day he was born. I mean, he was playing baseball. And he was always wanted, his father always wanted to be a ball player, and was a ball player, but not professionally. I think he was able, didn't make enough money. You know, he could make more money farming than he could playing baseball, which is a big difference today. But you see, they have the same piercing eyes. And it's a great photograph.
It's a very amazing photograph.
And, oh, this one is, well, just to, so you know that, you know, although I have a lot of baseball photographs here, this happens to be a Dempsey-Tunney fight. So my grandfather did shoot other sports, but not a lot. It was, you know, majority baseball. But it's a great shot of the Dempsey-Tunney fight in 1927, the Sesquicentennial. 1926, sorry, the Sesquicentennial. And it was an amazing fight between two most famous, you know, Jack Dempsey being like the Babe Ruth of boxing. It's a great shot at night. And a little Americana too. I forgot this was in there, but it's a great shot. It's my grandfather's shot. A lot of children, street scenes and things. Just Americana in the 20s. And this is a great shot of a little boxer Bill there with his boxing gloves. Bowl haircut. So.
Does anyone have any questions from our crowd in the bleachers or on the floor?
Feel free. Did you get a chance to come up and see them closely, I hope?
I have a question.
Yes.
Did your grandfather take any pictures from the members of the House of David?
Oh, no.
I was there last week. I went to Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Right.
And I got to see the houses where they lived.
Really?
And Jay, you're right. They weren't Jewish or Christian.
We had a discussion about that last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So did he ever get to take any pictures?
Not that I mean, I don't have everything he had taken. I mean, he shot from, like I said, 1911. Into the, actually 1958 is when he retired, so it was a tremendously long career, and he only kind of saved probably what was his favorite time. That's the only thing I can think of, but I actually know that he was at the Hindenburg disaster, and he was at, I have one shot from that, so he was in a lot of different places a lot of different times, at least as far as you could get in a car or a train, because that's the only transportation I had, really.
Two members still living.
Are
one's 93 and one's 97. One, the 97-year-old, will come up, Lloyd something, I forget his name, he will come out to see one game versus something, I've got to give you
the other name.
It's pretty amazing.
I did, as far as I know, no, I mean, a lot of, and there was Negro Leagues, too, that were playing, and the Stars in Philadelphia would have been playing at Shy Park there.
Right.
I'm sure he shot a lot of different things, but, you know, and you're talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of photographs over that many years, and I only have maybe about 200 total, very many, considering how many
Jackie Robinson. No, Jackie Robinson.
It's funny, later, yeah. So I only have it to about 1935, 38. And I just missed, like, DiMaggio and Williams and stuff. So, I mean, he would have been there shooting them, but I don't have, you know, photographs.
Do you know if he was ever there at the House of David?
Not that I'm aware of. I did a nice show for the Gratz College in Philadelphia, Hebrew College, and they had a showing of the Jews in Baseball, an American love story. American.
Yeah.
One that just came out.
Jews
yeah.
in Baseball, an American love story.
Story, yeah.
Right.
And, it was a great film. They had a film viewing, and I did a photographic exhibit there as well. And it's funny, I remember seeing a photograph that I was trying to find some photographs of the House of David just to have to show, not my grandfather's, but to have, and I found one that was a Babe Ruth with a fake beard on in the House of David. I mean, Babe Ruth is so, it's amazing how many different
things.
He was all over the place.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was just, you know, bigger than life. So, I mean,
yeah.
you ask for a cover, you know, hunting, you know, drinking, golf, you know, and then it was a great, but it's a fake beard and it's such a riot. But it was a, it was an original and it was for sale on eBay, and so I made just brought a copy of the eBay thing and people got a big laugh.
If you ever get a chance, you should go out there and see it.
Second. Fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, when the originals that survived,
yes.
your father somehow came upon them from your grandfather?
My grandfather, yeah. I mean, that was something that they worked alongside of each other, and of course, they knew a lot about. What was I going to say? My grandfather, I guess, kept what he happened to keep and what he liked the most. And before he passed away, he left them to my father, and actually his wife, my grandmother. So, and then they were left, you know, from my grandmother to my father. But luckily that, you know, he had the foresight to hold on to them. And, you know, and he was a photographer, so he could respect them and keep them. And I remember growing up as a kid, too, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, did you just find these in a box somewhere? And it's like, well, no, I kind of knew that they were there. My father, growing up, would talk about these ballplayers all the time, and my father, and about, you know, how he knew this guy and that guy and Jimmy Fox and so forth, and Babe Ruth did this, and so I always kind of knew about it. But as a kid, you don't listen to your parents, so it's, you know, you don't realize how smart your parents get until you're much older, and you know. So I started realizing what he was talking about and reading more and realizing, you like these ballplayers because they played during when you were a child and you know, when you were a kid. And, you know, what about Mickey Mantle? What about, you know, the players that I'd like to talk, you know, these type of things. And I just kind of started realizing how amazing that they were, and luckily they survived. And I started printing them, and he passed away actually before I started, was able to bring them out. But I lost my father in 91, but he was, you know, we started doing it together, which was nice. So
did your father also shoot baseball?
He did shoot some sports. He shot, he was a press photographer, so he covered a lot of different things. A lot of, you know, news events, and but I have no negatives of any baseball images or anything of his. No. Not as many too. I don't know if the newspapers, you know, kept more or what, or how that worked, or he didn't save them. And I have some images of his from about the 40s and 50s that were more like Americana images and street scenes and so forth. Yeah.
And you did not. You had your grandfather, this photographer. Your dad, this photographer. You didn't want to go down that path all the way, or?
Yeah, I know. I thought about it. And being in the press photography, didn't pay that well, you know. So, but I kind of appreciated it. No one else in my family had any interest in it. I mean, I did. I kind of learned from my father, so I learned how to shoot, and I took courses. But I never thought about doing it professionally, even though I had that kind of ancestry, you call it, pedigree, you know. But I do some of my own. I have, you know, a camera, and I do some shoot some things. But, you know, it seems today to kind of go in and after baseball, there's just so many photographers that do that, and they're all motor drive, and there's just so much coverage that it's hard to find anything unique anymore. But I do enjoy printing them. So there's a lot of technique in taking a photograph, and there's a lot of technique in printing a photograph. It's
right.
Two different arts.
Sure, absolutely.
But very similar, yeah, of course.
And then why don't you tell us here and to the people listening about the gallery that you have in Philadelphia?
Oh, sure. I mean, it was something when I started printing these and you know, taking them out and around and showing them and traveling with the big sports shows and so forth and art shows, and it was very fulfilling to see that people would still be interested in them. I had some people tell me when I first started doing this that, oh, these ball players or, you know, the people that appreciate them are dead or dying. And it was so untrue. I mean, I found that to be so untrue because they just transcend generations. These men are so famous. Ruth, Gary, you know, Cobb, Fox, and just these wonderful historical figures and legends. So that was very fulfilling to see that. And then I had, you know, a lot of people. I would you know, have an internet site, and I had, you know, worked out of my home. And I decided, look, I really would love to have a permanent place to show these images of my grandfathers. And so I actually put together a really nice gallery in Philadelphia. It's called 22 Gallery. It's on 22nd Street. People remember what street it's on. And it's funny, and I have 22 artists in there, too. But I have my grandfather's work up all the time, at least a couple baseball images, and I rotate them in with some Americana images and historical images and stuff. And then I have 21 other artists' work that I show, a couple other photographers, some oil painters, some printmakers, sculptors, and so forth. It's not a big gallery, but it's really wonderful in the Rittenhouse Square area of Philadelphia. It's 22nd and Latimer, which is near Locust Street in Center City, Philadelphia. But I still try to get out and, you know, get his work out there here and there and try to get exposure for his work. And this is wonderful to come here and show his work. And I've always had a wonderful response in the New York area just because of, you know, the wonderful quality of the photographs. And I think the metropolitan New York area just really appreciates photography. And of course, Ruth and Gary, you know. So it's I really appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and one of the interesting things about baseball itself, which is to a great degree, has the love of the game a lot of times comes from a father to a child.
Yes, it's
and,
true.
And I wanted to do this before Father's Day, mm-hmm. close to Father's Day, because it is really that type of a story. And through your efforts and your work and your artistry, your grandfather lives on forever. His beautiful work. And when he was shooting these photographs, my grandfather, who I never met, was a watchmaker in New York. Probably didn't, you know, an immigrant. He probably never went to a game. But my dad was a huge baseball fan and would tell me stories about all of these guys. You know, Jimmy Fox. I obviously never saw Jimmy Fox, but I would hear Jimmy Fox, double X, double X, double X. And I realized when I was older, yeah, his name was F-O-X-X.
Right.
And so it's really beautiful to see your grandfather's work, and it's art. It's I mean, they're gorgeous, gorgeous photographs. And to anyone listening, I would implore you to take a look. And they look very nice on the website, but nothing like they do hanging on a wall in person.
Yeah, that's so important to see them in person because of the quality of the work. And it's something that can be passed on for generations too, which is important to me because it took two generations to get to me. And it keeps me close to my father and my grandfather still by doing this. But it's something that will last. These photographs will last over 100 years. So it's something that can be passed on from, you know, father to son.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we really appreciate it. And now we're going to let everyone here come up and see the photos up close. But thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It.
Thank you.